Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint XP Podcast. Check out our international radio show and daily podcast at checkpointxp.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint XP Podcast on the Westwood One Podcast Network. Everyone's listening. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint XP radio show. My name's Dave Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
And returning from their trek out to the NAB, Norris Howard and Joe Sloan.
Yeah, we back.
You buried my drop.
I know.
Good.
I'm sorry.
No, not good. That was the pucket. What up, though?
Yeah, that was a good drop.
I'm out.
Anyway, welcome back, guys. How was NAB?
It was awesome.
You guys sure
awesome,
sent back
busy.
Enough stuff for us to put out on the Daily Show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Next time, I'll just go out there and slack off and not send nothing back to you.
You know that's not in your nature, Norris.
Oh, of course,
that's true.
Slack.
No, it was busy out there. I mean, like the first couple of days, like when we talk about like the size of shows, like we got there the first day, like yeah, this is like the size of E3. Then we're like the next day, we're like, well, it's like half the size of E3. Or it's like twice the size of E3. Oh, it's like four times the size
really?
Of E3.
Really?
So,
big?
Okay, E3 comprises up of the two halls of the...
and the E3 Coliseum.
We need to establish the boundaries of what you consider E3 because...
The main show... Floor.
So the two areas in the Los yes. Angeles Convention Center.
Yes.
You
yes.
don't count the stuff that goes on across the street in the, you know, like the Microsoft.
The Coliseum.
Not just the Coliseum, but just everything that happens in that like
whole. Not counting those. I'm talking about show floor space.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Because there was other side NAB related stuff.
Yeah. Sure. Like we'd have to like count like all the stuff we saw outside in like the parking lots. Because by the way, all the parking lots are like are half full with more exhibits and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
So we're talking about just show floor space. You go in, there's two halls. The halls are roughly the same size as the ones at E3. Central Hall is about twice the size of the biggest hall in the LA Convention Center.
Wow. Yeah.
Then after that, you go outside, as Joe illustrated, with all the sort of news trucks and stuff you could buy. Then you walk over a street, and then there's a third convention center, a third building that's about the same size as the Central Hall. And then outside of that, there's even more spots.
Yeah, wow. But that third building, by the way, has two floors, each of the same size.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's,
jeez.
I would say there's about four halls total that you could go view. With overall footage, it's got to be twice, three times the size of E3. It's huge.
Wow. So, I mean, obviously the NAB is not just kind of catered to video games like E3
right. Is.
There's a lot of like kind of general broadcasting technology and stuff that's going around out there.
All forms of broadcast.
What was the coolest thing that you saw out there that you can tell us about?
Oh, okay. So it's definitely the Unity.
Yeah.
The Unity engine that we got a peek at.
So I have a lot to talk about. Yeah, you guys talked with
Adam Myhill.
And fascinating discussion. You can find that over at our website, checkpointxp.com. But
what we don't talk about in that interview.
Because he alluded to wanting to show you guys something.
Right.
And immediately kind of took you over to see this.
Right. So he couldn't talk about it in that interview because he was literally unveiling it later on in the day. But he did give us a private demonstration after. And what he showed us was basically a new tool that's going to be in the build of, in the next build of Unity that is a artificially intelligent driven camera system that could be used for esports.
That seems like it's a game changer.
Yeah, they had to create an entirely new programming language to work with these cameras because of the massive flow of data that was going to be used. They had to make a whole new programming language for it, but they did. This thing can, at 60 FPS... load, run, assign values to, and display 50,000 cameras.
That
inside
is,
a game.
That is bananas.
Now, if you want to go down to, say, a reasonable number, like 5,000 cameras, which
sure.
I say reasonable, it's still an obscenely high number of cameras.
Right.
They had it running at 250 frames per second.
And this is 5,000 separate cameras rendering objects each independently.
Yes. So basically,
that's bananas.
Right. They showed this demonstration where they got these four guys walking forward. Each guy has a camera on all four directions of him, and then there's just tons of fixed points in every room.
Sure.
So the AI sees, hey, can from this line of sight, can we see any of the players? No, great. We don't even turn that camera on. It only turns on cameras that are actually seeing something that's of value.
Wow.
It assigns a value score to every camera based on whether or not what it's seeing is interesting.
Now, can it also assign a value score to like an object? Say, like if you wanted to assign a higher object score to like a bullet,
yes,
or a grenade,
yes,
or something.
You
wow.
Sure can. Everything yes. has a value, and there's manual overrides for all of it.
So the AI in theory knows, hey, okay, these two players are clashing at this one spot, and it's an epic showdown because of how many bullets or grenades are flying.
Yes.
And they know to show that not just that area, but the different fixed point cameras
yes,
around there.
They'll show that area, and they'll also move it around because they know one shot isn't, you can't keep a shot for too long.
Sure.
But it will also obey the laws of cinematography. It'll obey the directorial line. It'll obey the 180 rule. It
That's
obeys
ridiculous.
All of that.
Ridiculous.
It's insane.
That's ridiculous.
It like, dude, watching this thing actually run and work was like, our jaws were on the floor. And it was funny when he was giving his presentation, because about half the people there had no context for why it was
for
important.
What this was
like,
even
uh-huh.
doing.
And the other half were like, it fixes everything.
I mean, listen, Unity has got a massive task ahead of it because of how much we've seen, you know, things like Unreal be adopted across the board.
Yes.
And I think that sounds like an incredibly compelling feature, especially if it's applied to something like esports.
Yeah, absolutely. What they need to do is they need to get someone building an esport, a title that yeah. they have esports in mind with, to say, I want that. We're going to build it in Unity.
Very cool. All right. Well, glad to have both you guys back. Thanks for all of the great work and interviews that you guys sent back.
We're again, glad to be back.
You can find all of those over at our website, checkpointxp.com. And if you subscribe to the Checkpoint XP Daily Podcast, which I hope you do, all of those interviews can be found Monday through Friday of last week's shows. Make sure you check it out. Live at NAB 2019. Some impressive conversations in there. Again, Adam Myhill of Unity Technologies. We also sit down with HP, Fatality, developers behind Open Broadcast software.
Streamers for Mixer, streamers for Twitch.
It's really an impressive list of people that we got to talk to. So you might as well go check it out over at checkpointxp.com. All right. So let's get this back on track. How we normally like to kick off this show is by sharing reviews. Last time we shamed you guys pretty epically.
We did.
Because we had no reviews to share. We've now got two reviews to share today.
All right.
Shame works again.
It does. Apparently, Talus and True Strike, shame worked on them very, very well, because they say, I have been shamed. I am ashamed to say that I am one of the listeners that have procrastinated on leaving a review.
One of our longest and biggest fans too, Talus, and you should be ashamed.
I've been listening to these guys for years now, from the LBR days in the beginning of Checkpoint. I've always enjoyed the content that they've put out. With the change to the daily format, the addition of Sarah to the show has just gotten better. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you so much, Talison. We appreciate it. Does anyone want to read this other review?
Well, first of all, Talison, we officially rescind your shame.
No,
you
I'm
are unshamed
you, for yes. a little bit longer.
Yes, we will alleviate
no, we'll get
some
rid of it.
Okay. Anyone want to read this?
Yeah, I got this one from Rhiannimus. Says, great show.
Rihanna.
That was a great bit.
But one of the best SNL skits ever.
Yep. So not sure if your review numbers include Canada, but greetings from up north. I really enjoy listening to the main Checkpoint show, as well as the daily, which comes with its own great topics and news updates that really cover everything. I don't have a lot of time for games these days, so listening to this on my commute helps me stay connected to what's going on in the industry. Keep it up.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Well done.
See, and that's why what we do, both here and for the radio, is important, because there are people out there who just don't have time, not just to play games, but even to just keep up on
to
stuff.
Just, yes, stay
yeah.
involved.
Totally.
Like, there are people who take for granted being able to just pop up a Kotaku and read through some stuff. Some people ain't got time for that.
You know how many people get bugged out when I'm just like, yeah, man, I can't wait to play Samurai Showdown. There's like, that came out like 30 years ago. I'm like, nah, bruh.
Not the new one.
Not the new one. They're like, what? And then I show them a trailer, and mm-hmm. they're like, oh, snap, is this going down? Yeah, between that and the new Mortal Kombat, like, yeah.
Saw man. The Katana trailer the other day.
Yeah.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah, I think I already got my main figured out, though.
Johnny Cage?
No.
No? Who?
I'm not telling you.
No?
I'd only main Johnny Cage if he still has the dick punch.
Of course he does.
He does. Yeah,
he does.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an X-ray move.
All right.
I think I saw a rumor that Smoke might be coming to a deal to the DLC character.
Ooh. Maybe. Ooh. I haven't seen Smoke in a minute.
That's yeah. Cool. He hasn't been there in a while.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
My whenever like Mortal Kombat 1-3, my main was always Reptile.
Oh, Reptile, yeah.
So I fucking love Reptile.
I actually really liked Reptile in MKX like a lot.
Yeah,
I thought he was dope at MKX.
I don't profess to be good at fighting games at all, but I was actually not bad with Reptile on the, especially on the arcade game. Mm-hmm. So, and it actually took some effort to unlock him on the fucking arcade as well.
Yes, it did.
Yeah,
he was not just available for pick character.
That's right.
I feel like it was actually until MK2 where you could play him, because in MK1 wasn't he a secret boss that you could fight?
Yeah. But MK2 was when he became
on the console version. I'm pretty sure you could play him.
Okay, yeah.
In one? No.
Are you
really?
Sure? I'm almost positive you could.
I'll check this out.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Please do. Because I
remember him being an unlockable boss in both of them, but I thought you could maybe unlock him to play, because you could unlock Shang Tsung was the bad guy. I might be conflating 1 and 2 in my head, actually. Because Shao Kahn's not in 1, is he?
Because 2, I know you can unlock him on the arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shao Kahn isn't in 1 at all, is he?
Shao Kahn?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay. I've got 1 and 2 conflated in my head then.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I think he is. No.
No? Oh, that's sad.
No.
Oh, yeah. I guess you can't.
Huh.
They do have the way to unlock him to fight, though, and it was ridiculous. Because you could only do it in certain, one in every so many matches, because it had to be like a certain... You had to hear like a sound effect on a stage to be able to summon him or something.
Oh, was
like
that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. God. Reptile was weird in Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, MK2 Reptile was a playable character.
Right. Yeah, okay.
I thought he was a secret character in 1.
Nope. Who was the secret character in 1? Because I know there was.
There was no secret character in 1. You fought Reptile, that was it.
No, but were there any secret characters?
No.
Okay.
Are you
Shang Tsung or anything?
Yes.
You can. You wait. No. You can unlock Goro in 1. Can you?
Through your game genie.
That could be it. I did own a game genie.
Yeah, I did too.
Memories.
Come on, man.
Memories.
Come on.
I thought that there was unlockable characters.
You also
in 1.
Thought that you played through Fallout 3 when you didn't, Nate.
Exactly.
We cannot trust you.
I watched my roommate play it.
No.
That's different.
No.
Okay.
So I definitely played the shit out of Mortal Kombat.
Who are the secret characters in Mortal Kombat 2?
Smoke and Noob Saibot.
Okay.
And Jade.
Oh, yeah. Jade was in 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Fair enough. Man.
I'm gonna have to do my own research on this, because I don't fucking believe you at all.
I'm looking right at you.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
You
I think you're lying.
Lying.
I think you're lying.
I'm lying, but I have no reason to lie about this.
I think you're lying. Because I clearly remember unlocking Reptile.
You did not.
I very clearly remember.
I'm telling you.
All right.
That.
Well, do your own research. Come back to us next week with what you find.
Do your research, bro.
We'll get Nate's findings.
The wicked went to the east. It's like one of my favorite videos ever to be on the internet.
That's really funny.
It really is so funny.
All right.
So we are going to discuss our very first Gaming Society game today.
Yes.
And we are going to be inviting your calls. So there's a process for how this is done. We are hanging out on Discord. We've got an on-air channel that we can bring you into that will allow you to be on the air. But here's the thing. So we've got a calls channel. So if you want to flag yourself to call into the show, you can let us know through the calls channel.
Yep, Lloyd is in there now, awaiting everybody.
That's right.
I'll moderate y'all.
Lloyd will just kind of take a listen to what you want to talk about, just to kind of test your mic and make sure that everything's sounding good, and then he'll move you up to the on-air room where we will then take your call on the air. So
now remember, guys, we're not treating this like a podcast. This is going to be treated radio show style.
Concise.
Be brief, be concise, and try your best to keep it clean and coherent.
That's right. So
try
or
be shamed.
Yeah, we do want to invite your calls again because we wanted to get everyone in on this hope that you guys at home have been enjoying your experiences with Celeste. And we want to hear about them. So if you want to give us a call, hang out in that on hold room. Lloyd will get you on the air and we'll take your calls as they come in. If they come in.
Maybe we don't. Maybe no one likes Celeste and doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, or maybe people don't like us. I don't
know.
Could
be.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It'd be reasonable.
Yeah, because this will be a really good way to try to convince corporate to let us take calls on the show if we don't get
if
it.
No one calls.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, that'll be great.
All right. Let's talk about Celeste.
Okay.
Because I was skeptical going into it, and I don't think...
How come?
The first thing is that the visuals of the game have become almost like a trope, right? Like they are almost
8-bit indie game.
An 8-bit indie game, right? Like it's almost kind of like and there's enough whimsy in there to kind of at least initially make you kind of roll your eyes a little bit and go, okay, where is this going? And I thought it was going to be a lot more saccharine than it was.
Yeah, a lot more saccharine.
The story that it actually does tell is very introspective and actually one that I really liked.
Yes. I mean, and for those who don't know, I mean, Celeste, indie darling of 2018, released January 2018, 10 out of 10 on Steam reviews, 10 out of 10 IGN, 10 out of 10 most places.
One at the Game Awards.
One best indie at Game Awards. Yeah, very
amazing,
very
soundtrack.
Well received.
Yep.
Looking at Celeste, I mean, it does have that what we would call the modern indie vibe. There's been a renaissance of the sprite pixel animation in indie games of the last 5 years. It very much plays up.
It's a platformer, which it seems like indie games only make platformer.
It's pixel graphics and sprite based gaming done with 3D rendering technology.
It's kind of the next step of what Super Meat Boy began years ago, basically.
Yep, correct.
It's the continuation of that trend.
And like Super Meat Boy, the challenge associated with the platforming in Celeste is much the same that you would experience in something like Super Meat Boy or VVVVV. There's like a lot of...
Practice makes perfect for flawless gameplay.
Yeah, this is all... It's a genre onto itself. You know what I mean? If Souls games are, you know, that type of genre, this is the...
The indie scene sort of version.
Indie scene version sort of that genre.
It's the Meat Boy genre.
Yeah, the Meat Boy genre.
I don't know. For lack of a better term, I don't know what else to call it.
No, I think
that's a good
term.
The NES Ninja Turtles.
Well, not even. But I mean, like, it's like a hyper difficult platformer that it also moves at a speed that platformers back in like the 8-bit era they just couldn't handle.
Blast processing.
And I mean, Super Mario Kaizen was at least some of the kind of origins of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
Because that was, I think that predated Super Meat Boy, and I'm pretty sure that was just literally a mod of Super Mario Brothers.
Right, exactly. I mean, talking about what Celeste looks like, you're right, it is kind of that pixelated style, that modern 3D backgrounds, and I was very impressed with Celeste's art style overall.
Sure.
At first, like, I would say like the first 5 minutes are very off-putting of the game, and then you get...
I wasn't really sure what to really expect
until you begin the climb, you're like, okay, I see what they're trying to accomplish with the graphics.
See, and that, but I feel you, but the thing is, to me, the art style is like my least favorite part about it.
Really?
To be honest.
I'm going to second that.
What would you have preferred, I guess.
Yeah, I don't.
There was actually a lot of elements of this game that I didn't like.
Well, if there is a thing I didn't like, it is the art style. Just because I feel like, for what you guys said, that
do you think
is
it suffers from, or is it just more like a personal taste?
No, because I usually love pixel art. Anything I think
it's
pixel,
an oversaturation problem. Because
it's not the game's fault necessarily.
No, that's an art style decision.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's an aesthetic choice. I'm not saying I think they made the wrong aesthetic choice.
No, I'm just saying I don't particularly care for it.
See, I'm on a similar page to you guys with a few things that I personally don't like about the game. game, but I think all the choices work for the game, if that makes sense.
No, I think I think that's fine. It's just like, for instance, there's a level that's made up of so much red. The whole level is like red and black.
Yeah.
And like, my eyes don't like that.
My eyes don't like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not from, like,
first of all, could you sound any older when you did
it? My eyes don't like it.
Also, Nintendo has some really bad news for you about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And my eyes didn't like it then.
I'm going to say, like, whenever someone, like, plays a song I don't like anymore, my ear holes don't like that.
just straight up. I mean, you know, my eyes didn't, I didn't feel it. But as Robbie was saying, putting that into it in the entire package, it completely makes sense why they made those particular decisions. Choices,
sure, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
This is just not a style of game. This is not a genre of game that has really moved the needle with me very much.
Yes. See, that's also for me. As I'm playing through it, the artistic choices, the music choices, the gameplay, like, I get all of it, and it's all fantastic, but it's not the type of game that I'm normally attracted to.
See, it's not the type of game I'm attracted to, but it's one of the types of games where I am so happy I played it.
That's fair.
Like,
Now that I'm done.
The story and narrative, I thought, was fantastic. Loved that.
Well, not just that. I am so excited about finishing it and being able to talk about it that I really, really enjoy it. It looks like we have a caller.
Oh, okay. We have our first caller, huh?
Yes, we have Satori on the line. Satori, what's
up? Hey, Satori, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's
glad to be with you for your 100th episode.
Thanks for calling in. So, what do you think about Celeste?
I absolutely fell in love with it.
What was the thing that made you fall in love? Was it an element of the story? Because, I mean, I do think that it does have a really nice, deep story, especially for anyone who's introspective.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's a lot of notes that it hits there that are probably pretty emotionally pleasing. Was it specifically the aesthetic of the graphics, or was it the challenge that the game presented?
It has to be the aesthetic, but there's like a specific point where this game went from I like it a lot to I love it. And that was at I believe it's the sixth stage you're playing, where you fall down and you're making your way back up.
Ah, man.
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that stage.
Spoilers.
And when that music kicks in and you're just racing to, you know, jump on your, I forget her name.
Part of Madeline.
You're racing to jump on it.
Yeah.
The part of yourself.
Battling.
Battling. That works.
Battling.
I'm not sure if that was the actual name, but that works.
I think that's the name I've seen on fandoms, but yes.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh, that's clever.
But I mean, it is a really nice story that, you know, reflects, I think, a personal journey that a lot of us have while growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I felt like this is a story that I feel like I connect to it through the lens of remembering what my life was like in my mid-20s, right? Like, if I played this in my mid-20s, it may have been the most important game of my life, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things that it's like, this I could see this game allowing people to have an epiphany. About themselves, mm-hmm. or about their own lives, and I like that. But you know, being 34, I'm not. I felt
life
that,
is different.
Yeah, right. Like, I was like, I
you
felt
can
like
appreciate the message, but yes, it doesn't have the same effect
but I
on
learned,
you personally.
I learned those lessons in a very different way than the game is portraying, and I can appreciate somebody, you know, learning a different, you know, the same lesson a different way, and I really like that. But I felt like it would have had a much more, you know, really big,
profound,
personal, profound impact had I played this game maybe, you know, 10 years ago.
Well, I want to say thank you, Satori, so much for your call. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, all right, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, I mean, let's talk about it. The story surrounding this game, I mean, from its just premise would be very simple, as you're a person who decides they want to climb this mountain. We don't really know why they want to climb the mountain.
That's apparently very dangerous, said to be undoable.
And it's undoable. as you're climbing it, you're meeting friends along the way, and you're facing off against this villain who is effectively a part of you. It's a reflection
dark,
of you.
A dark version of you.
Yeah, and not to say the evil version of you, but
just
all
another
of your,
part.
Your self-deprecating yeah. thoughts, your
the,
fears,
the personification
your
of all that you dislike
of your negative
about
thoughts,
yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah and really the interactions that your main character has with this character as it pertains to the people you meet. When you meet the hotel owner,
yeah,
and you have you are very positive and supportive. You're just like, hey, I want to help this person. This person seems like they need it. And it goes kind of well until you get to the very end of the hotel sequence, and then your dark self shows up.
It's like, this person's a weirdo.
This person sucks.
And says all those awful things about him.
Literally horrible.
But wait a minute. But they're not untrue things.
Exactly.
They're not untrue.
That's what made it good.
It's not. You say to yourself that you don't actually say out loud.
Yes, it's an internal, you know, like, because you can be dealing with someone, and I, you know, we've all had customer service jobs before,
oh,
where we're
course.
Dealing with someone, and you have to maintain a veneer.
Turn the filter on.
But in your head, you're like, this guy is a fucking idiot and has no idea what the hell he's talking about. Right?
Or this person has, you know, something going on, you know, is am I safe right now?
Yes.
Is this something that a situation I should be thinking about getting myself out of, which I thought was even doubly resonating because you have a female protagonist, too. Mm-hmm. So I think that sequence was very important for pushing forth the storytelling and what type of storytelling will be coming in the rest of the game. But for me, as somebody who, you know, thankfully has never really had to wrestle much with mental health or anxiety or depression, I felt like I got to learn a lot about the people around me who did. And that's where the value of it came for me, because I'm very much so. What was the guy she meets on the climb?
Theo. Theo.
Was great.
I'm the Theo. Where I encounter this type of person, and it can become very difficult because you want to be positive and you want to help, but realize that your positivity literally may be
a detriment
to the situation.
And it's interesting because that's reflected in a bit of Theo's frustration.
Yes.
With Madeline.
Yeah.
Or maybe not frustration, but exasperation. Like,
yes.
Oh, why are you always such a downer?
And it's just the lack of understanding. It's understanding that, like, certain people, like when something bad happens, certain people have to process it. They have to just, okay, I need to wallow in this for a moment. It's the only way I can understand it. And other people can't let themselves wallow in it. They have to immediately move on. It's the two different. And so we see that dynamic play out with Theo and Madeline, where Theo is very much, like you say, he's very positive. He's very can do. He's very like, all right, let's get on to the next part.
Yes,
and
something happened. Let's keep it moving.
Even he says at the beginning of the game, I don't think I can make it to the top of this mountain.
And
but
that's okay.
It's all right. I'm good
and
with
that's
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so I think that was really important as well. We have another caller. We got Ash Saber on the chat. Let us know, Ash Saber, what was your opinion of Celeste?
So I think it's one of those rare indie games that actually, excuse me, earns its all the praise it got. I very much enjoyed literally everything about that game. Playing it when it came out and then getting back to it for Checkpoint Radio's little revisiting of it. I know you guys touched on the story already. The music by Lena Raine is incredible.
It's I mean, award winning, I think, right?
And yes,
it's won,
and
it's
right,
won
yes,
awards.
It was.
Did win an award, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's literally just one of the most well designed games I've played in a long time. The way it teaches you to deal with its mechanics is something that games just do not grasp anymore.
Every aspect of this game fits in so well with every other aspect of this game.
Yeah, thank you, Ash Saber, for your comments. We appreciate it, and I'm very happy you enjoyed the game.
Yeah, something that Ash Saber just hit on is that one of the few indie games that she feels, you know, lives up to the hype that it got. So I can relate with that. Like when I played Undertale for the first time after everyone telling me, you have to play this game, you have to play this game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but now everyone's told me to play it, I'm not going to like it that much when I'll be
right.
too critical.
Right.
But then I played it and I absolutely loved it.
See, I'm experiencing that with Undertale right now, because you talk about it so much that I almost don't want to finish it for fear of not enjoying it as much as you did.
You'll enjoy it.
That's even that statement.
You're the problem.
Yeah. But here's the thing is, again, people told me I would really enjoy Celeste, that I would love the music, that I would love the storytelling element of it. And it was all true.
That's fine.
I did enjoy all of
but
that.
But now it has to live up to such a reputation
right.
that I'm almost afraid to meet my hero in this sense.
Sure. Which is why like games like Undertale and Celeste are so award winning, because even when you set those expectations high, they still rise up and meet them.
I definitely understand that. And I just definitely want to comment on something else Ash Saber said, which was the design, which is the part of the game that far and away made me love it more than anything. Because you get into the game, it tells you about two mechanics via text, and you will never see that text box again.
And it just kind of throws new elements at you as...
And you figure it out.
And it basically says, figure it out, dummy.
What's this orange diamond? I actually Googled a few things, and I'm like, what does that do?
Yeah, because a couple of them, even when the mechanic happens, you don't realize that it's happened.
What is it doing for you?
The diamond, especially, because in the beginning, you're so panicky hitting the button still, like, you just wasted anyway half the time.
Yeah.
But which was your favorite of the mechanics that they added in?
I mean,
because this game has really taken platformers to their logical conclusion.
I really loved what they did with the little launch bubbles.
Oh, like on the fifth level, I think they show up.
Yeah. When they start getting real complicated, and then you start getting different types of launch bubbles.
Yeah, because it's the orange one and the green one. Yeah.
For me, I think it was introduced in the temple, which was the second or third level, I think, where it's like these windows that looked into like a little starry thing, and when you hit them, you went straight through the other side.
Whichever direction you go.
You had to hit them. That was cool. Very precise angles.
Yeah.
Mine was near the end of the game, the gold feather, where you have to...
The gold feather was really great.
It's an all new like way of controlling, and at first it was really hard to control. I was struggling with it.
Here's one of the things that I really, really loved about this game, because it has an assist mode in it where you can choose to sort of turn on little like basically cheat sort of things, unlimited stamina, unlimited boost, invincibility, all those types of things. Even having those on, I was still able to see and appreciate all the different mechanics, all the difficulty of it. If Dark Souls had an invincibility if Dark Souls had an invincibility mode and you just ran through slashing at stuff, the entire game I feel would be lost.
You would ruin, Dark Souls.
You're just hitting things, right?
Yeah.
But I can still tell it's the same as what you experienced by actually going through it, Norris. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But I could tell going through, if I didn't have assist mode on, I would probably destroy my Switch. Now, I can tell that looking at things.
Now, here's the thing, okay, because I do want to talk specifically about the difficulty here for a second.
Sure.
Because,
it's hard.
I only got, I think, to about level 4 because I used assist mode minimally, right? Like, I wouldn't run through entire levels. If there was a single map on a level that I was struggling with to, like, my 100th death, I'd be like, fine.
You'd turn it on to get through, then turn it back off.
Yes. But that's why I only got through about maybe half of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the narrative kind of winds its way around the difficulty, because the entire narrative is about
the struggle of climbing that mountain.
How difficult this climb is supposed to really be.
Yes, exactly. And that is, I believe, reflected through the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, that I think is an important thematic element to understand the core of the true story that's being told.
No, and I agree, which is why I refuse to cut on assist mode. Which I mean, I get it. I got some maps that I got like 200 and 300 deaths on or whatever. You know, stages, not maps.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I got that old school feeling of like, this map will not defeat me. Like,
I will
you
beat
know,
it,
like
yeah.
this, you know, you, they are, because there are rooms that you will get into and you will say, fuck me. Like, how?
The first chase.
That was me. As I'm going through with invincibility on, I'm looking at this thing. There's no way.
The first chase sequence,
oh my God.
I mean, most of it's okay, but then you get that one part where you have to go a long way before you actually get to, like, get another a new save screen.
Yeah. And you're
like,
yes.
That was the first one where
you want to talk about tension. You want to talk about tension in my hands?
Yeah.
I mean, like, dude, I do think like I am a little bit more arthritic for have playing this game.
And this is one of the things that I love about this game is that even with the inclusion of this, and even with all of us playing at various basically difficulties of the game, none of this was lost on any
right.
of us.
Well, and that's the thing is, I truly believe that the easy the assist mode is canon to the game. The whole idea of the of this climb is it is meant to represent your life, and there is an idea of there are shortcuts that you can take, and you can still get to the goal even with those shortcuts, and but you will not have grown as a person
if,
the way
if
you
we're
did,
making,
would.
If we're making the allegory that Celeste and the mountain inside of it is, you know, mental health or personal issues,
yes.
is assist mode sort of like, you know, therapeutic drugs or, you know, like...
I would call it maybe just, I mean, any kind of assistance,
any kind of
really.
Support.
Any kind of support that you have in your life. And understand there are people who have support and people who don't.
And even in the narrative, they let you know that using tools that are available to you is okay. Whether you decide to use them or not,
right.
It's fine so long as you make it to where you're
going. You really want to drive home that allegory, though. Some copies of the game should go out with assist mode and some copies shouldn't. Then you really have the allegory for, like, well, did you...
For, like, privilege.
Yeah, did you hit the privilege lottery?
Wow. Yeah, that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. But, I mean, no, I agree, but that, I think that
I mean,
is sort
that,
of...
I don't know. I have no idea if that's the allegory that the creators were actually going
but
for.
But if that's what you took away from it, then I think that's important. If you could see that how closely that is tied into the narrative of the game... Or how closely it's tied to the general theme of the game.
Sure.
Then I think that's intentional.
Yeah.
I don't think something like that is done to, you know, to be left
as
up to interpretation.
As an appeasement measure.
Exactly.
Or
no.
To your story, you were able to get through all of it without help. Mm-hmm. Some people in life cannot do that.
Yeah.
And it's okay to use help if you have access
totally
to it.
Totally okay. Which, again... It's only in a weird way only made me aware of my own mental state. Like I played through certain maps in certain rooms, and again I didn't react with frustration, I reacted with determination.
See, but it'd been the opposite for
but
me.
I also recognize that doesn't necessarily make me special in any way. I just maybe had some extra time that day, maybe I was in a good mood, whatever. The whole thing is that I could easily see how someone could play that game and be so frustrated that Even the fact that the assist mode is there, they don't want to do it. They'll throw it down. They'll say, fuck this game.
Yeah. Well,
I think that is very intentional that team.
And I think the reason the game is so relatable to so many people is because while, you know, mental health is maybe the comparison that many
thematic
people, that many people take, really the mountain can symbolize any journey
or any challenge
it could be getting through college, it could be developing your first game, it could any journey or challenge that you struggle to overcome where you have to keep trying. I mean, that's the brilliance.
I mean, mountain is like the most like used analogy,
the universal analogy,
struggle,
right? Yeah. And that's why the idea of even just something like you don't have any number of lives, it's as long as you're willing to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You fall, you respawn, you go again. It's literally this idea of overcoming the challenge one piece at a time.
And you know, I think that was something that, you know, Dark Souls, when it came out, was also trying to hit at, you know, that death is a major mechanic.
Yes.
It is a tool for punishment, but it's not.
But it's not the end point of the game.
But it's
correct.
A mechanic as well.
It makes it an active mechanic. And, you know, there's because a good game requires two things. It requires a reward, you know,
and
a stick and a fail state.
Yeah.
And you know, Dark Souls was incredibly inventive that they introduced the fail state as a mechanic.
I mean, it literally is trial and error, the game. You know,
that's exactly correct.
And Celeste sort of has a similar type of thing, but I think what makes Dark Souls different is the fact that it's the entirety of its reputation is not built upon its difficulty. I think with Celeste,
you mean for Celeste?
Yeah. Celeste's entire reputation is not built upon its difficulty. Its difficulty is something it became known for, but the story, the music, the art style, so much
everything
other stuff
about that game
is part of the representation of what is Celeste. While Dark Souls, so much
more about Celeste is aesthetically pleasing than Dark Souls.
Exactly,
you're not wrong.
Holy shit, Dark Souls. By the way, Dark Souls, for as much as I love it, and for as much as people are praising Sekiro and everything, it is a horribly depressing gray game.
It's bleak.
It is bleak as shit.
Yeah, if there's a game that accompanies the word bleak,
I think that's intentional. It's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to feel oppressive. It's supposed to feel like a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think, again, you know, it's funny because, like, the way that they made the assist mode kind of like play into the central themes of Celeste, I don't think you can do that in the same way with a Dark Souls or a Sekiro.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Well, because at the end of the day, your story at the end of Dark Souls is that you extend the suffering unto the next generation, effectively. Like, you know what I mean? Or you end everything. To allow that assist mode to work, you have to get the carrot at the end of the stick eventually. There has to be that kind of, Not a happy ending, but satisfying
finality,
conclusion.
Closure.
There has to be closure. There has to be kind of that I've overcome sort of thing.
Sure.
As opposed to Dark Souls, which takes the ending of their game and just takes it as an opportunity to kick you and say, like, nah, sorry.
You made it. Fuck you anyway.
You made it, but you're just extending.
But what was the point, really?
But literally, would anything have been different if you didn't make it? And that's the question you're left wondering at the end of Dark Souls versus Celeste, where you're like, no, I made a major difference in this person's life.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty fair. I think that that's pretty fair. Because, yeah, at the end of a Dark Souls game, you really just have your own accomplishment. You don't have this sense.
You don't have this sense
of, like, completion or, like, epiphany, insight.
All it ever is.
No, and that's, but there's
but
a, there's
designed.
A, there's a beauty in that.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
There's like
the journey,
almost,
not the destination.
Yeah, there's almost like a nihilistic quality into that where it's like, listen, it doesn't matter how much this may have been the most frustrating experience for you, but you know what? Listen, we don't have any insight to offer you. This is just what it is.
Now, if you want to beat Celeste and feel like garbage, do what I did earlier today and watch a speed run of it.
Oh, God.
I watched a dude clear this game in 26 minutes.
No, really?
That sounds great. I would love to watch.
I mean, like,
it's incredible.
No, for you, it would probably be incredible. But the fact that, like I'd be sitting there going, like, I had to turn assist mode on here and here and here. How the fuck did he do that?
Oh, man, I can't wait. I'm going to go back and look at that and then use it as runs for myself.
I would mean mug it the whole time.
Oh, dude, I was sitting there, like, watching, like, and I, like I said, except for the last level, I was out of time. I had to finish it up, so I assist mode it through the last level. Yeah, the levels, like, when he got to the stupid hotel level, which I spent a long time on, and just blitzed through it in, like, 6 minutes, I'm
well,
like...
Well, part of what makes that level so terrible is, like, every time you hesitate, it kills you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love that.
I mean, it's a great mechanic. Don't get me wrong, it's just hard.
It's an awesome mechanic. It's just damn impossible, unless you're so confident
but
that
like,
you're
speedrunning.
Yeah,
okay, yeah,
also
but like,
know,
can,
know that that was one of the first levels where it's not just sort of straightforward through, right?
Yes,
yeah.
there were options.
And if
where
he knows exactly where to go...
Yeah.
That's true.
The thing is you guys can't tell me there hasn't been a room or anything that you've cleared, even with assist mode on, that you've cleared, like, without having to lean on that stuff. Y'all can't tell me that there wasn't a room you just blitzed through and you went like, fuck, I'm smart.
Yeah. No, like, there were a bunch of those where you, like, you get it on, like, the first try or the second try, or at least you look at the room and immediately know, okay, I know the path through here properly.
Yeah.
I don't need to experiment. Yeah, you do feel pretty good.
That ran out very quickly. That ran out for me very quickly.
I about the fifth stage, when I actually started getting the launch orbs,
yeah,
that was where I started to really struggle.
Dang. Like, word. I don't know. I mean, the struggle, there's a little bit of struggle on all the stages for me, but I felt like by the end of the game, I had it pretty figured out.
So, well, like, you do, was, because you do get better at just handling the mechanics.
Yeah.
So, like, the basic, like you're right, after about the hotel stage, I didn't ever have any, like, misclicks anymore. I didn't have, my problems were just squarely with tackling the new mechanics and the new obstacles.
Yeah,
right.
Almost
I didn't have to battle myself anymore.
Almost 90% of the times of me dying in that game are me going, like, fuck, I just missed that jump.
Oh, man. It's another allegory for mental health. It's first learning to deal with your own pitfalls.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you guys. We're on hanging out on Discord. CheckpointXP.com. Hit the Discord icon or just click one of the handy links in the chat that Lloyd is providing. Let us know what you want to talk about, what aspect of Celeste you want to talk about, and Lloyd will get you all set into the on-air room. And we'd love to hear from you guys. Again, that's over at CheckpointXP.com and just click the Discord icon.
Once a month, we're going to be doing a show like this where we're talking a game that we've picked.
That's right.
Actually got next month's already selected.
Well, we're
going to
wait to tell
the
people.
Yeah, we'll tell them. We'll tell them
right at the end.
Okay.
There's one aspect, though, of Celeste that we cannot go any further and not talk about. That's the music.
Oh, yeah. The music's great.
We got to talk about the music.
So they always say that it's disagreement and discussion that makes for a good talking points. I don't know that we're going to have a whole lot of disagreement on the music.
Extreme
admiration
is going to be the start of this.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, everything about this game, from mechanics to music to the aesthetic to the challenge to the narrative, for me, all of these things just fit together like a perfect puzzle.
Yeah, no, the music was expertly done. I love the music.
I've heard some great remixes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all times.
Have you guys done any of the B-side levels?
I started them.
What's the difference? I haven't done any of them, so I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, is it just different? Is it different layout?
Yeah, the layouts change a little bit. The color scheme changes a bit. Some of the traps are different. It's a remix.
It's a remix of that level, basically.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's an additional challenge.
Did I hear something about seasides? Is that a thing?
I didn't hear anything about seasides.
No, I haven't got that far.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Interesting, though.
I thought I heard somebody... Crystal Heart so I could do the core and do the B-sides.
Gotcha. I thought I heard somebody in the chat talking about it, but I could be wrong. But,
maybe if you're out there, let us know.
But yeah, I don't know. I was pleasantly surprised by it. I can't say that I totally got into it. Right, like I played it enough to feel like I had something for the show.
I'm glad that I finished it, but had it not been for assist mode, I definitely would not have.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like it's a game that I would have finished over a long period of time.
See, now that, like, it's kind of become my bathroom game now. Like, if I have to take a lengthy shit, I'm going to be bringing my Switch into the bathroom, and that's probably what I'm going to be playing. Yeah.
That's definitely, like, the kind of game that I would play in, like, it's 11 o'clock. I know I have to go to bed in the next half hour or so. I'm going to play some Celeste.
That's where I was playing it as well.
Yeah, it's that kind of game for me. It's not a game that I would have fun plugging 4 or 5 hours at a time into.
I
ended up doing that
really
easily.
I did it for my first
play
session.
I think that's why you got through it.
Yeah, I did that for my first play session and like cranked through a lot of it. And then it was always kind of like 30-minute bursts.
Like,
yeah.
I started it, and I played for maybe an hour the first time, and I was like, oh, man, this is cool.
I wouldn't have had the time in a single month to have played through all of it normally.
Like, yeah, I mean, I understand that, but I think when I beat it, I put, like, 3 hours into it.
But it's sort of like one of those games, like, I played through the majority of Hotline Miami, but I didn't do it in like a single sitting. It would be like I'd be on one map for like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
And again, this was a game that I'd mostly play, you know, like when I was taking a crap or, you know, downtime at work.
In that vein, it's kind of like V for me. Like,
yeah.
I'd find some time to play it every now and then, but I couldn't sit down and plug six hours into it, I'd have an aneurysm.
I'm gonna be honest, man. This rekindled everything about old school games for me. About like the concept of sitting down and not necessarily doing it to complete a story, but doing it to overcome the challenge. Like there would be I would tell myself, yeah, man, I'm going to play Celeste for about 30 minutes, and then I'm going to sit it down, and I'm going to go do some other stuff. And that easily turned into, oh, no, this map is killing me, and I need to finish it, and it's been 2.5 hours.
Can I tell you, playing Celeste has never made me want to play Mega Man less.
See, maybe that's it. And I play a lot of Mega Man.
See, I think that's where you might have an advantage over the rest of us is because like there was a
brutal platformers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because it makes me go like if Mega Man had an assist mode, maybe I'd play that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I can
fucking
see that.
Mega Man. Like, there was so much Mega Man in there that I was picking up in terms of just the platforming mechanics and how difficult Mega Man and unforgiving Mega Man can be.
Mega Man was brutal, dude.
I love Mega Man.
I know you do.
I think that's a big part of it. Platformer advantage.
I had Mega Man on the Game Boy and that handled like butt. So you want to talk about a not fun platforming experience. Mega Man for the Game Boy.
I never owned a Mega Man game growing up.
Oh, man.
That was part of the problem. I played them at other people's houses. There was a daycare center that I used to go to. I went to a badass daycare center when I was a kid. Because they had
two words I never thought I'd hear together.
I know, right?
Let alone out of his mouth.
I know, right? It's weird. But they had this whole like jungle gym that was like carpeted. It was like an indoor jungle gym, like made for like rough housing. It was fucking awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then they had a bank of like 8 NES systems set up with TVs. And it was like, dude, you always had something to do there.
That's cool. I had to worry about if my daycare had, you know what I'm saying, tetanus everywhere, and you know the paint was like still made out of lead.
But
come on, man, it was Detroit. It wasn't like it was a third world country, man. We had power. Come on, now DTE was lit. All right. I'm just saying that
mine was next to a Kroger, so every time my mom would go grocery shopping, she'd drop me off there for an hour.
See?
It was awesome.
See?
I loved that place.
I did not have daycare.
Growing up in the suburbs.
But that was, no, like, real shit, though, that was where I was exposed to, like, 99% of the NES games that I played as a kid.
I dig it.
Like, that's why it sticks out so much for me.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I just want to play Battletoads.
See,
that was the first place I ever played Battletoads, first place I ever played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
See, I love
first
those
place
games.
I ever played fucking Kid Icarus, Zelda.
Hey,
so maybe that's
you
it.
Know,
maybe
Teenage
I
Mutant
just
Ninja
had...
Turtles was bullshit. The game was so hard.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a very hard game.
That stupid jump in the sewers.
The
sewers,
goddamn Ghostbusters game. We had this is a vivid memory from that time when I was growing up. There was no less than 8 kids around one television, all of us trying to just figure out how the fuck you play the Ghostbusters game.
Ghostbusters. God. That game is trash.
It's literal fucking trash.
Have you ever actually gotten into the Gozer building? I'm sorry, the Zool building?
I don't want to talk about it. No, because with 8 kids putting all of our heads together, no, we couldn't figure out how to play the thing.
Yeah, no, it's really dumb.
See, that's difficulty.
I've never seen it beaten without Game Genie.
See, that's difficulty done the wrong way.
Yeah, that's fair. At least with Celeste, you understood what the game wanted from you.
That's true. I understood.
Get to the next page. Okay, I can understand that as a concept.
All right, guys. So what is everybody's general overall about Celeste? What is your overall opinion, final statements? Robbie, kick us off.
Despite not liking the game itself, like personally, I think that what the game is fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. I would second that. Like, it's not a game that I think I would have gone out of my way to experience. I'm glad that I did. Mm-hmm. I felt like I did get something out of it.
Yes.
I respected it enough to not just want to run through it in assist mode to be able to comment on the story. Like, I actually genuinely want to
get through
beat the challenge.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would recommend it to anyone who likes that style of game.
I think it's a game that everyone should play, even if you don't like the platformer. Fine, turn
Which
on assist
is fine.
Mode.
Yeah.
Turn on assist mode and experience the story. Like I said, I believe that assist mode is canon to that story. It's a game that everyone should try out, if for nothing else, than to just listen to the music.
Yeah.
North. That's what's up. For me, this is akin to what everybody felt going through playing Braid. This is on that level to me, where I feel fundamentally different as a gamer having gone through that experience. Not just necessarily from getting through it and playing it the way I played, but also the story behind it and the music and the way everything synced together. It was a game that I could tell so much care and love and thought was put into it that I'm remiss that every game doesn't feel that way.
You know what my favorite thing about Braid was?
Yeah.
You end up playing a creep.
Yeah.
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 Because that's a twist you don't see coming.
Yeah. But that's just what I'm saying. It's like, not necessarily because of a story twist, but right. that feeling of a collective experience.
Sure, yeah.
Where you go, oh, snap. And you knew every person that had played through it had a different sort of spin and experience with it, but you all went through it together. And, like, that's what I feel with Celeste, is that, like, if I go to somebody and I was like, man, I put so many hours into Celeste, like, that person would be like, yo, oh, my God, like, did you da-da-da-da-da? And I love that. So I really appreciate this game for what it is. I'm glad we picked it, and it deserved every single thing that
every accolade that it received.
Every single one.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's look ahead to the next game that we're going to be playing for the Gaming Society.
Drum roll, please.
Now, hang on. Before we get into it, now here's the thing: we have to kind of set this out. It's April 13th. It's almost halfway through the friggin' month.
Yeah.
I don't know what that little noise was
that
I
was
just
an interesting sound.
That was
like
weird.
Where did that come from?
I don't know, but it was like it was like weirdly musical.
Yeah.
It's like weird. A nose fart.
Yeah, that was weird.
Nose fart.
I don't know what that was. That was really weird. Anyway. Should we give everyone till like mid-May?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we had to push this one back because of travel issues, and I mean, it happened. But yeah, we'll reconvene in mid-May.
Mid-May? I mean, Borderlands 2 is... I just spoiled
it. It is also a little
bit
of a
really
longer game.
It's a really long game.
What if, since we're in the middle of the month, we just extend it to the
end of May?
Unmute my drops.
No, I can't because... Because
of Discord.
People dinging in and out of Discord.
I muted them. Unmute my drops.
There you go.
Unacceptable! How dare you spoil the game?
But it's fine. Right. It is a long game. So, like, end of May will be what, Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah. So beginning of June.
Yeah.
Let's just give it to Memorial Day.
Okay.
Memorial Day weekend.
Fine. So, our second game for the Checkpoint XP Gaming Society is
Borderlands 2.
There we go.
Which is dope. I never played Borderlands.
Yeah, I've
never
played it either. Actually,
I haven't either. I've heard really good things. I saw, like, I had a girlfriend once who was playing through the Handsome Jack story, whatever the pre sequel is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I thought that looked pretty good. I'm excited to check out Borderlands 2. So there you go, guys. You have your new assignment.
You've got your marching order.
That's right. Your task is to play any amount of Borderlands 2 between now and the end of May, Memorial Day weekend.
However much you need to play it again.
Yeah, however much you need to play to form an opinion.
That's right. And we'll be taking, of course, your calls here on our Discord. So if you know, now's a good time. If you're not a part of the Discord, it's a great way to keep up with us and what's going on with the show. CheckpointXP.com. Click on the Discord icon, and it'll take you straight to our Discord invite. I feel like I'm putting you on the spot, Joe, because we didn't talk about the look ahead to esports this weekend.
Well, let's see. Actually,
we're already halfway through the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, as we're speaking, so NALCS is happening.
Let's table that.
Well, that said, ESL Pro League Season 7 also starts this weekend.
Great.
So there is that.
You can watch that. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on Sunday.
Yes. Yes. We have to.
Game of Thrones.
It's back.
The final season.
I can't fucking wait.
Oh, by the way, I guess we know what our podcast is going to be about next week.
Duh.
And for
the
Duh.
And for foreseeable future.
Yeah.
All right, so expect that.
It's Game of Thrones time. Guys, how fucking psyched are you for this?
Pumped.
I'm so excited.
I'm beyond psyched. I'm so glad Sarah got all caught up so we can watch that together. Robbie Fatstacks just moved in. He's going to be watching it with
us. Nice. Nice.
Dude, now, my best friend hit me up. Was like, I texted him. I was like, what's good for tomorrow? He's like, bro, I'm in Miami. Me and my girl will be back on time for the show. Be ready.
Really quick, does anybody have any, like, after you've watched an episode, any, like, post Game of Thrones rituals that you do?
Besides, like, freaking out.
Besides crying.
Last year.
Go straight to Twitter and look at the memes.
Yeah, that's a good always. One.
Seriously.
Always. Dude, Game of Thrones.
That's like a whole nother hour.
Hold on. Y'all know me and my infinite love for Black Twitter. Seeing Black Twitter and Game of Thrones combine on Sundays is the most hilarious thing.
I bet.
Who's the oh, I forget her name now. The actress, she was a comedian beforehand, that last year all of her tweets about it were amazing. I don't know.
You were the Twitter person last year on that.
Well,
dang.
I don't know who the fuck you're talking about.
Anyway.
I want to say it's Leslie something.
Leslie Mann?
I have no idea. But
she wasn't a comedian, though, so it's not
her. Was she not? Oh, well, I don't know. But anyway, all of her Games of Thrones, like, stuff just in general were brilliant. All of her reaction videos, everything.
Oh, you mean
so
since from SNL?
Maybe.
Was she in the Ghostbusters movie?
I think so.
Okay, yeah.
Is that her? Yeah.
Yeah, that's her.
Amazing. Everything that she does with Game of Thrones is just hilarious.
I'm beyond ready for Game of Thrones.
I feel like
it's been the longest wait.
All right, so quick. Here's a bonus thing. Who's the first to die?
First.
Mm-hmm. Jorah Mormont.
Beric Dondarrion.
I bet it's going to be one of the three dudes that are up in the wall right now.
Do we have a body count from the wall?
No.
No.
We don't know who's alive or dead out of that.
Well, we know Dolorous Ed
is alive. We know Tormund lives.
Tormund and
Beric
survived. We know that.
So does Dolorous Ed. We see him and Dolorous Ed.
Yep. Man, that's tough. That is tough.
I feel like
it's going to be an off-screen death from that's technically
no,
be
no,
the
no. First on-screen death.
On-screen death.
Mm. First on-screen death.
Shit.
I'm telling you.
Oh, this is a challenge.
Jorah.
I don't think
Bear
so.
More.
No. I think Jorah's got
something to do. Yeah, a couple episodes.
Yeah, I think he needs to.
He's going to end up.
Oh wait, no, because he just cured his grayscale.
Yeah.
He's going to have like a straight up sacrifice.
Ah, maybe.
Like something that we see coming.
I'm going to say Davos Seaworth.
Ooh. Davos.
I will second Davos.
I think it's Davos.
No, wait.
Davos is around,
no,
bro.
Melisandre.
No, I think she makes it longer than anyone. She's going to be happy about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Davos is around, bro.
Because if Davos sees her, it's over.
I don't want it to be him. I don't want it to be him, but I think there's a very real chance that Bronn is done.
Oh, Bronn.
That's another good one too.
I mean, because listen, we've only got how many episodes do we have in the season? Six?
Seven.
Seven?
No. Seven.
Seven?
They all
wait.
No, it's
it is six.
Six,
yeah.
It's six.
That's what I thought.
But they sort of increase in length.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying.
The first episode is like a usual length.
Yeah, it's about an hour.
And almost all of them get a little bit longer as the season goes on.
I don't know. Because I can see where Melisandre
sticks around
has a place.
First of all, remember the second episode is the Battle of Winterfell, and we're getting multiple people dead in that.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
I think, because Bronn just doesn't serve much of a purpose at this point.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of space for, like, buddy cop.
I know.
Stick right now.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I just don't see where he ends up moving forward.
The only thing I could see maybe is if we find out that Bronn went north with Jaime.
Maybe.
That could happen.
Hmm.
But I don't know.
But his level of self-preservation is so good, he might just be like, you know what? It's like
that's the last place I want to be right now.
If I have no more use, I'm fucking off out of here.
But that would be a good narrative gut punch right out of the gate.
Yeah,
someone as beloved as Bronn.
Yeah. I'd be sad.
That's what I'm saying. It's like
it's gonna be good. Whoever it is, it's gonna be really good.
I mean, just think about this. Episode 2 is the Battle of Winterfell, bro.
I know. It means there's 4 episodes after that,
which probably means the Battle for Winterfell ain't gonna go that great.
which means it's gonna be a bad day.
It's also Endgame weekend, so you know, have your Xanax and
Endgame and the Battle of Winterfell
to, like,
are the same
yourself,
weekend.
Like straight.
Wait, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Battle of Winterfell will be the 21st. Well, it'll be that weekend, and then Endgame after. You're right.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God. God, it's, mm-hmm. it's Endgame is barreling at us so quickly. I was watching a little bit of Ant-Man and the Wasp earlier today, just because it was something to put on in the background.
I got three more movies to get through.
I'm just sitting there like, I cannot wait for Endgame. This is going to be so great.
I'm going to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's the only one I haven't seen.
My new headcanon.
Do it, because there is some stuff that we'll probably...
No. Yeah. I'm going to watch it. I got time this
weekend. My new headcanon is that Scott Lang and Hawkeye just make dad jokes all the time.
Yeah.
Like whenever we're not seeing them, they're making really stupid dad jokes.
Dude, if we get a scene of Scott Lang teaching Hawkeye how to do close-up magic.
Great.
I love it.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy Game of Thrones this weekend. Again, welcome back, guys. Glad that you guys are home. We'll be back on Monday right here at 5 p.m. as per normal for Checkpoint XP Daily. We hope that you'll join us because we're here every single day at 5 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/Checkpoint.
Tell your XP. Friends about us.
That's right. Tell your friends because, you know, like we've got a lot of stuff that's going on here at Checkpoint XP. You know, we want to make ourselves one of the brands that you go to and trust when it comes to discussion about video games, whether they're a small indie game like Celeste, whether it's an e-sport like Counter-Strike or Overwatch, or whether it's just, you know, the industry. We want to be there providing conversations for you guys to take with you and have interesting conversations in your own life. So please share the show with a friend. Give it to a family member as a gift.
Give the gift of Checkpoint.
Yeah, wrap up an MP3 player and just load our episodes down on it and give it to a random person. I don't know.
Please.
Just share the show. Share it with your subreddits, your Discords, wherever you happen to be talking about gaming, because we would love to find more people enjoy listening to what we have to say. So anyway, thanks for joining us for the Checkpoint XP podcast. CheckpointXP.com is where you can find out more info about the show, interviews from past episodes, including the almost 3 hours of interviews that these guys collected out at MAB 2019. That's all over at CheckpointXP.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint XP is a production of Westwood One and Beasley Esports XP. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. For the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint XP podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointxp.com.